Hey, I'm Jason, and welcome to Season 3 of the Tales from the Pit podcast. And welcome to Tales from the Pit, the behind-the-lens access to the entertainment world and the creative people involved. Today is our part two with our guest, Sahaj from Ra. I hope you enjoy it. So moving forward, so you got the first two albums under that label. Do you go independent at that point, or what's the next step
for you? So what's interesting is my relationship with Avery Lippman, who him and his brother Monty started Universal Republic, which today is the biggest rock record company in the world, right? Everybody. I mean, The Weeknd, everything. It's just everything. I lost my thought. What were we talking about?
Where do you go next from the third album, stuff like that?
Yeah. So basically, my relationship with Avery was good, and he was always good to me, and he was always honest with me. Even if he didn't give me that kind of like specific guidance, he was always good for general guidance. And at some point he realized I had made another record and I had a private investor. And he said, you know what, I'm going to hook you up with Fontana, which was an independent distribution company, but he made it legit. We had an actual imprint on Fontana with a product manager and the whole thing. So we spent some money on that one, and it was hard to make money on it, but it was a great lesson because we were able to sell, you know, almost 30,000 records by ourselves.
Yep.
And with, you know, when you're making $6 a record, 30,000 isn't that bad.
Right.
So the you know, as opposed to selling a record for $10 and getting about 80 cents off of it, which is what was happening while we were signed to the label, right? And we never saw that money because it was the 80 cents was going towards the recoupment of the album.
Yep.
Anyway. The moral of that story was we went and we did it. By the time we'd done Black Sun, which was 2008,
yep,
we went on the radio with Broken Hearted Soul, and that did well. It was on the charts for 18 weeks.
Great song.
Yeah, and we had a lot of fun with that record. Again, made it home basically in a house. And then I guess a while, 3 years, 4 years later, I go in to do Critical Mass, and that was funded by a Kickstarter.
Okay.
So we got that was the age, you know, now technology is starting to interfere. And so we got a Kickstarter, created that album, Critical Mass. And then after Critical Mass, I really, you know, felt like I needed to focus on producing and writing for other artists simply because there was, you know, I couldn't do both for real, so I had to pick one.
Right.
And for the next 6 or 7 years, I did nothing but producing and writing. I didn't put out anything. I put out my solo album, which I did in 2012, and then I put Critical Mass out in 2013.
Yep.
And that was it. And I didn't put out anything again until, you know, Intercorrupted, which was 2021.
Right, yeah. So what was the first... You got so many bands you've worked with, but what was the first sort of big project you worked with that wasn't your own stuff?
Big. Such a weird.
Or what was the first in general?
I'll put it to you this way. I met Dustin from Starset very early in my foray to Los Angeles. So I moved to Los Angeles in 2010. In 2010, I get a phone call from a guy named Jake Livingston, who worked for Epic Records. And he said, hey, I got a guy in LA, he's doing writing sessions. Do you want to work with him? And I was like, what? He's like, oh, he's this band called Downplay. And he's, you know, he's the principal guy and we signed to Epic and we're going to do a deal with him. And I was like, okay, cool. So I go and I pick him up. I bring him to my house. He starts playing me songs. We start messing with stuff and came up with some stuff pretty quickly that I thought was pretty cool. And, you know, it was funny because through our sessions, he was playing the stuff and I was like, wow, this is really cool. Very Breaking Benjamin-y, you know? Yep, yep. But I was like, you know what you need to put in this? It's like Batman strings. Just make it like you know, make it the Dark Knight meets Breaking Benjamin. And, you know, we were sort of on the same wavelength because it wasn't like I came up with that out of the blue. He had already started sort of like hinting at stuff like that. But that's essentially what, you know, his first song, which was Demons, it's just strings and heavy stuff. And he has this understanding of science. And it was, you know, it was one of those things where, okay, cool. So actually on the first Starset record, I don't do anything. I don't have any songs on the first Starset record.
Right.
But I was there sort of through the creation of it and understood and sort of was that. In that same period of time, just after that, I started working with a band called September Morning.
Yep.
And she, I actually, through the work that we did, she ended up getting signed to a major label. She ended up getting signed to Virgin. And then you get to see what happens when a band gets signed to Virgin to a major and then it gets shelved.
Yeah.
And so we had to go through a whole bunch of processes. The record was made and recorded 4 times. And ultimately, it finally came out through Sumerian. And it started their career, which has been, you know, sort of a medium career. The branding part of the band is probably ultimately more successful than the band itself. So she's evolved into a person now that's got 100, you know, over 100,000 people on Instagram and things like that. And she's, you know, and she sort of understands crypto and she's been involved with all kinds of NFTs and things. And if that part of it is working well, and then I started working with Another Century, which was this label. Century Media had an offshoot called Another Century. So that brought a bunch of bands into my universe. It also brought Tommy Vext and Doc Coyle into my universe. Yep. It also brought, well, I had known Tommy since 2006, but I met Doc through that. And I also met the Other Wise guys, and I met Stitched Up Heart. And geez, there's a bunch of other ones. I Set to Kill, just a whole bunch of those kinds of bands started showing up at my house in LA, and we just started working. I eventually did a Stitched Up Heart record. I produced all the vocals and wrote a lot of the melodies on the Sleeping Lions album for Otherwise. I ended up doing, there's a lot of stuff I'm just not thinking of. I actually sang on a Roger Glover song. Roger Glover from Deep Purple. I sang on a song for him on his solo record. There's just been various things. And then ultimately, I ended up doing the first Starset record I worked on was Vessels.
Yep.
And on that album, I have 4 songs.
Yep.
So, and on that album in particular is what I would call, at least to this point, my favorite song I've ever done for another artist. So there's a song called Die for You, which I wrote with Dustin, but really sort of wrote in a vacuum. And then he came in and we sort of adapted it to his band. But that's one of my favorite songs I've ever, I think it might, it is the favorite, my favorite song I've ever written for another artist. Okay. 4 songs on that album, and then straight from that, so that's roughly 14, 15 in that time period. I think that record came out in 16. Then he came back. We did 2 songs for Divisions. He came back. We did 2 songs for Vessels. I did Manifest, which is on Divisions.
Yep.
Which was a single. Then, so I have a total of 8 right now. We have 2 that I'm working on. He's actually stowing away for real on Shiprock. Upcoming Shiprock, so that we can write, because I'm bringing my mobile studio.
Oh, good, good, good. All right, yep.
And then that leads to, I would say, so 2017, Bob Marlette calls me to come in to his studio to meet with John 5 and Nikki 6. And I go in to meet with those guys. We end up talking about doing a project. We end up starting something, and then it just sort of radio silence. Nothing happens for like 6 months.
Yeah.
And then that May of 2018, Nikki 6 just calls me out of the blue and he's like, hey, I'm working on this movie and I need these songs. Can you help me write the melodies and lyrics? So he came over, he started coming over to the house, and he was coming to my house for like 3 or 4 months pretty regularly. And we did The Dirt and then the other 3 songs. And that was cool with that. In that time, there are a lot of bands I'm not even thinking. I actually just recently did a song with Saul, which is a cool band.
Yeah.
And then ultimately 2 years ago, God, it's already 2 years ago. I think it's almost 3 years ago now. I think it's 3 years ago in the summer of 20. Yeah, so it's the summer of 2020. I meet Johnny from Nothing More in New Orleans, and we just vibe out. And then ultimately they call me and they're like, hey, we need help producing the vocals for this record. We need to get it done. We're in a real time crunch. And I was literally about to go out on tour and I had 10 days. And they're like, okay, come. So he comes for 10 days. We don't get everything done. He comes back for another couple of weeks after the tour and we get everything done. So three quarters of what is, I guess, Spirits, the new Nothing More record.
Yep.
Three quarters of it or two thirds. I don't know how it breaks down, but the majority of it I produced with Johnny at Sweetwater in Indiana here. Yep. And then I, you know, and when I say produced, you know, like I'm an insanely sort of fair person. You know, Johnny is sort of a self-producer to begin with.
Yep.
But everything that I did that made, you know, like everything I did that we worked on, ultimately Johnny would go home and tweak and mess with anyway. So it just ended up being like mostly what I did with him and a lot of stuff. Yep. But there's some moments. So I co-wrote Tired of Winning, which was their single. And I have a special moment in that song is the second verse pre-chorus harmonies has these really cool things in the verse. And I did all that. And I did a lot of the harmonies on that song. I just like that song. The song was fun to do. It's another song on the album called Valhalla, which I wrote with them, wrote the melody for the verses and stuff. And then, And then after that, I started working with Jason. Yep. So Jason, in the middle of COVID, calls me up. Jason Hook calls me up, and he got my information from Nikki Sixx.
Okay.
And so I started working with Jason. A lot of work there, writing, producing vocals, talking with him, becoming his therapist, and you know, spending a lot of time sort of helping him frame what's going to ultimately be called, I guess, Hook.
Yeah.
And it'll be his project, and I think it's going to be really good. I think there's some real potential there.
Yep.
Help them get management, help them put a lot of things together. And then there's just been a lot. And then, you know, been touring with Ra a lot last year, which was really satisfying.
Yeah.
Mostly from the perspective of, you know, the years that I took off, you know, the 7 years that I took off, silver lining to that was it's 7 years I didn't beat my voice up. So when I was able to come back out, once I got sort of past the point of, you know, like on the tour that you saw, that was really the first time I was getting up on stage and I was 100% all the time. And what I mean by that was I wasn't fumbling over lyrics. I wasn't struggling to play the guitar. I wasn't staring at my hands. I wasn't like sort of disengaged with you. Like I was 100% able to perform because I played enough shows that it was just all autopilot and I could just focus on being present.
Right.
And that was great with that tour. That was the most satisfying thing about that entire run was I was completely in my element.
Good.
So
it showed too.
That period, that now at my age to sound that good was, it's bittersweet because it's part of me wants to go out and do the tour for the rest of the year. And part of, you know, and the other half of me is like, you're too old. There's no point in doing that.
Right.
And, you know, that tour in particular, also bittersweet from the perspective of, you know, I'm the only guy up there who was the original member. And while it didn't seem to really affect the audience at all, it was one of those things where I didn't feel connected to the older songs, not because I don't like them, but I felt like, oh, I don't have to be this guy anymore.
Sure.
Like, you know, having the other dudes in the band sort of made it that I had to be the 54 or 53-year-old version of me. And without them, I can just be me.
Yep.
And I know that that sounds weird, but that's sort of what I'm planning on doing this year is if I put out raw music, it's going to be a completely personal interpretation of it. It's not going to be, you know, I'm not looking for anything that hints at new metal. You know, I write a lot of cool songs for other bands and I help bands sound new and cool. Well, I might as well help myself sound new and cool if I'm going to put anything out there.
Yeah.
And I don't feel, you know, one of the things that's interesting about having not been Shinedown or Breaking Benjamin was I don't feel a responsibility to my catalog. I don't feel like I have, you know, I've played Do You Call My Name as much as I possibly can in front of as many people who are willing to come into all the venues that are willing to book us.
Yep.
Right. And if that doesn't amount to a big number, that's not my fault.
Right.
My thing is, if I'm going to do this going forward and I'm going to perform that song, it's going to be new. It's going to be an interesting interpretation of it. And everything else is going to be much more designed to feel like 2023. I at my age, I still pat myself on my shoulder because I feel like I listen to music like a 13-year-old girl.
Okay.
Because I like top 40 music. I like Doja Cat, Bad Bunny, Juice WRLD, SZA. Like, that's what I listen to. That's what I listen to all the time. And that's what inspires me, by the way. You know, every once in a while, somebody will send me a metal band or something very interesting. In fact, recently I listened to this band Silent Planet, which is really, really fun to listen to, and they're crazy. And I really dug it for a while, but it doesn't hold me for more than a week or two.
Okay.
And there's not a lot of metal that sort of feels new to me. I mean, you know, there are moments of things that I like, oh, I'll listen to that four or five times and then I just move on. But I've listened to SZA's record, I don't know how many times already, you know, and it's that thing where there's a layers of color and shape that you can't get when everything is turned up to 11.
Right.
Yeah, so that's sort of the beauty of where I'm coming from. Cause I want to solve the mystery of how do you keep the power and the passion, but still somehow have the depth and the color of these truly successful artists, you know?
Yeah.
So that's sort of my experimental goal this year. And again, when I say that, I'm not putting out a record. I'm going to be putting out singles as I write them, because I still have 100 other bands to work with, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Jason Hook stuff. I mean, I was fortunate enough because, you know, I work with him for the photography stuff and some other things here and there. And he was, you know, I was fortunate enough to hear stuff as it's being drafted by you guys. I'm like, holy shit, this is freaking killer. I mean, and he's sending me stuff that he's worked with other artists. I'm not going to name any names, but he's worked with other artists that you've been sort of, you know, polishing and stuff like that. I was like, man, this is really killer stuff. So I'm really excited for that. And I can't wait to see what that comes out. Now, you guys did the Shiprock last year. You and Hook did all the Van Halen stuff last year.
Yeah.
And I think you and I talked about that and you said that was stressful.
Well, it was a terrible experience because it was completely the wrong. So, you know, I'm always the person that I think of something conceptually and then even if it's impractical and stupid, I now have to figure out how to make it a reality. Yeah. So in theory, singing and playing bass at the same time for Sammy Hagar, like right now, and why can't this be love or whatever it is? In theory, that doesn't sound that complicated, but the bass player and the singer are doing completely opposite things in those songs.
Time signature so, stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't make, there's just the rhythms of the bass parts and the rhythms of the vocals are not designed. You know, when Sting does a cool bass part that's complicated with a vocal, he's singing and playing it, so you know it's possible.
Yes.
Whereas this stuff was just never meant to be played as the thing. And I just made it so stressful that it was hard to focus on, you know, I'm not great with lyrics to begin with.
Sure.
But, you know, the lyrics in those songs are ridiculous. Like they're so weird and goofy because those guys would get drunk and just come up with anything. Right.
Yep.
So I'm trying to figure out these lyrics that don't stick to me also while I'm trying to play bass, also while I'm on a boat, and I'm also in front of a bunch of people who are super hyped that I'm there.
Yep.
And I'm trying to like emote and get in there. And what happened actually, no one noticed this, is I get up to the monitor that has my microphone. I get up there and I play bass and I'm like, oh, hey, can I get bass in the monitor? And the guy's like, sure. And he takes the vocal out.
Oh shit.
So I'm playing bass and it took me a couple of like lines to realize that this monitor is now off. It's just bass. I'm hearing myself in the PA, but I'm not hearing myself out of the monitor in front of
shit.
Me. And I just was like, you know what? I'm not going to be that guy to be like, hey, this isn't working. Like I just went with it. It didn't help though.
Yeah. I mean, I watched the video of it. I had many friends there. And they said you guys were the highlight of the whole trip, man. They said you guys were so awesome.
I don't know. If they say so, sure.
Sure. I mean, it's good. I mean, it's good. Van Halen's meant to be fun and, you know, you just enjoy, you know, it's just a good, I mean, it's very technical for the guitar stuff. And, you know, it's Sammy's not easy either, but I mean, that's just fun.
Well, the Sammy stuff is just hard because it's in the top, it's, you know, it's in the upper echelon of my range, which I can hit those notes pretty easily. Yep. But again, playing bass and not, it's just the words are all goofy. Yeah.
What do you have for plans for this Shiprocked, or can you even talk about it?
So this Shiprocked is, it's busy for me, which I'm excited because it's actually a day longer and I'm glad that I have stuff to do, but I'm actually doing a solo raw storytellers set.
Sweet.
So it's just me, but I'm doing a raw solo storyteller set. So I'm going to do a couple of covers and then a bunch of raw songs, but like just me, a guitar and some programming. And it's supposed to be me and an acoustic guitar, but I just hate that. I've written every raw song to be two guitar parts, and I just don't like trying to dumb it down, even though I can. I also don't, I'm just personally don't enjoy playing steel string guitars. Like they're fine for when I'm recording. Yeah. I just don't enjoy them. They're too big on my body if I'm standing up. I just don't enjoy them. Like I don't have fun playing an acoustic guitar. Yeah. So I'm playing an electric, but it's all basically pre-mixed. And it's just going to go through this little PA. I'm playing in the atrium, which is essentially the lobby. So I'm doing that. Then I'm doing two songs for the Stowaways, which I can't say what they are. Yep. But I'm doing two songs of the Stowaways. Then I'm also going to get up with Nothing More and do a song, which is also a surprise, but that's fine if people hear that. And then I'm also supposed to be getting up and doing something with Corey Glover for his event. But we haven't really solidified that yet. And if that doesn't happen, that'll be okay. But at least it's enough stuff to keep me, you know, because last time all I had to do for 5 days was the 20-minute set of those Van Halen songs.
Yeah.
And that was way too much downtime for me.
Right. I get it. Yeah. And you're surrounded by a bunch of people that, you know, it's just party time, man.
Well, it wasn't even the party aspect. It was just the isolation being on the boat that much. And I had lost my birth certificate, so I couldn't get off the boat. It was a whole thing.
Yeah. So we skipped over this, but can you talk about Mattel?
Sure. Mattel. So in 2012, I had been working with this kid, Eric Emery, and I had worked on producing him. And he was like, hey, I want to hook up with this girl, Maytal. I'll hook her up with you to record and do some stuff. So she comes in to the studio to do this one song that was already written, but it had no melodies and no lyrics. So I write melodies and lyrics and then ultimately recorded her and put the song together. Then I mixed it. And then we had Dave Schiffman mix it. And we ended up, that was the song, right? So, and it was called Breathe. And in the process, she used that one song to do a Kickstarter. Now, she was very famous on the internet.
Yeah,
and she raised almost $180,000 in her Kickstarter for this album.
Nice.
In which we ended up making the record. And I, you know, started working with her regularly. And me and her have this really funny sort of sister brother with sexual tension, anger thing. So we literally argue to the point that like her husband is just like, you guys get married because this is stupid. Cause we fight, like argue horribly. And she gets mad at me and I get mad at her and I get mad at her. And then ultimately we figure out ways of making, you know, because she was one of these people that had a million opinions, but no context for the opinions.
Okay.
She's successful on the internet, so she thought it somehow translated into being a songwriter. And I was like, look, you don't know what you're talking about, so let me do this. And then that would be offensive to her, so then she would attack me. And it just ended up going back and forth a million times. But anyway, long story short, we ended up making two records. We lost Eric. Eric didn't get along with her at all, so ultimately he left the band. The second album, we did a million auditions to try and find a replacement singer, and she just was so frustrated and gave up and basically said, look, she didn't exactly beg, but it was basically begging. We didn't really have an option I ended up singing the second album. And then the rule was, if I'm singing the album, if it's me singing it, then you essentially, you don't really get a say. Like, I'm going to write these songs with you in mind to your aesthetic, and we'll go through the lyrics and we'll go through it all, but I'm just going to write it. I'm not going to deal with arguing with you about all these little tiny moments. And I did. And I tried to keep it its own thing. I really tried to make it, there's certain rhythms that I kept. I made it more mathy. I was much higher in range than in the raw stuff. Mm-hmm. And I tried to do a slightly different voice, a slightly more, I ripped off Nothing More on the single Armalite. But there's, it's its own thing to as much as a degree as I could do it in this time that we had to do it. But I'm very proud of that record. There's a lot of really, really intense moments of creativity for me personally, and the things that just sort of came out of nowhere that I loved. I think the bridge of Hydra is one of my favorite things I've ever written for anything ever.
Yeah. I mean, that I love that second album. That is really, really killer. It's called killer The Witness. Album.
Yeah. And our cover of Hotel California just passed 1 million streams on Spotify.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Congrats on that. All right. We're running a little long. I just want to ask you a few more if you have a little bit more time.
Sure.
I'm taking up much of your time when I know Hook's been, he told me, like, you need to be working on my album. So,
right.
Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, when I saw you live, you guys sounded freaking killer, killer live. I mean, you had everything dialed in, and then you put out a Facebook video of how you create your live with very minimal amounts of equipment. You know, I've had my band, I do all of our production stuff in regards to synchronizing or click tracks and then synchronizing any effects and stuff like that, lighting and stuff like that. And for me, when I go out and perform, I'm so fucking stressed out about, is everything on? Because everything's on the weight of me. I have to kind of dial everything in. You have such a complex setup, but it's so friggin' good sounding. Is that wasn't stressful for you at all with all that weight on you?
The correct description is that it's extremely simple. It's very simple.
So, yeah, but there's so much can go wrong too.
I think that's so, you know, here's the thing with technology, right? So technology is one of those things that as it progresses, as it exponentially becomes more powerful, right? Because technology changes at such an incredible exponential rate.
Right.
That what we don't sometimes have the strength to do is to trust that computers are essentially challenged and stressed by the workload, right? So if I get The Rock to pick up a cardboard box, I know he's going to pick up that cardboard box 100% of the time. But if I ask The Rock to pick up a 250-pound dumbbell, he may not be able to pick it up after 30 or 40 times.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So imagine my show is a cardboard box and my computer is The Rock.
Yep.
So as long as my computer is so overpowered, so completely beyond what I'm asking it to do, I have I have more faith in the computer than I do with the bass player standing next to me.
Okay.
Because the computer is being asked basically to just pick up to do nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when I make the session for the show, all it is an input for one guitar, an input for a second guitar, plugins that go to those two inputs, right? So the Helix does all the effects, distortion cleans, all the reverbs and choruses and delays for both. So it is a Helix on one and a Helix on another. That's an entire session with just two plugins in it. Okay.
Yep.
Now I'm going to add my vocal track, which has compression and distortion and reverb and delays and all of that stuff. So now that's three tracks with effects in it. And that's it.
Yep.
That is the entire workload I am asking this laptop to do. That's all I'm asking it to do, is to run three live tracks.
Yep.
Then the next thing I'm asking it to do is to play the audio for all the things that are sequenced.
Right.
And playing audio for a DAW is the least power consumptive thing that it does.
Yep.
So asking it to play roughly 10 tracks of audio, and never even at once, it's really just 10 separate channels with audio on different points in the thing.
Yep.
With no effects on it, with nothing going on, and just routing it out of the X32. Don't forget the X32 is the interface, and it's also the mixer for the front of house.
Yep.
It's sending the channels to front of house. So I'm asking all of these units to do such little work that I really don't ever have any concern. Now, on that last tour, we ran into a situation where I had thought that I had turned off. So Windows, right? Because it's a Windows computer. Sure. Windows has a default sound scheme.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So if I turned those all the way to zero, I made the assumption that those were off.
Yeah.
So what happened was ultimately, Sam at one point had unplugged the mouse to change it to the other input. And when he unplugged it, it made the sound. But when it made the sound, it shifted the sound. It shifted the audio engine from the Nuendo audio engine to the computer audio engine, and it shut off.
Oh, shit.
So we had to deal with that. He had to restart it in order to reset it. And that happened exactly once in 2 years of touring.
Good.
Yeah. And that was because he unplugged the mouse in the middle of a song.
Yep.
Which you would just want to do normally.
Right. But those are those things you just never would expect. You can't predict. You can't prepare for. You just.
Yeah. But again, you know, I think I broke more strings in the middle of songs than the laptop. Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
I broke a string in the second song in our show at the Whiskey. I mean, and that was just recent, you know, so it. To me, the idea of using this technology, but being smart about it. Like, I didn't do, like, nothing more. They have, like, a computer that is jacked, StarSet computer that is doing video, and 9 million things can go wrong because it's doing so much. Yep. Like, it's literally running the entire universe, and it's a $20,000 desktop that lives in a cooled box that has to run everything perfectly. That's great. And again, when you're comparing even playing Call of Duty to running a song on my programming, the song at its worst isn't even challenging the computer compared
to what
Call of Duty is challenging it to do.
Of course, yeah.
So these computers are built with all of this headroom in the technology, especially for music. So for me, this $700 laptop that you saw us do the show is overkill. It's got an i7 in it. It's got, you know, 32 gigs of RAM to run three channels.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the sound was perfect. I mean, you guys were so dialed in. Everything sounded so amazing live. So
remember the drums aren't going through the computer.
Right.
And the bass isn't going through the computer.
Right.
So the only thing that's going through the computer is the two guitars and the vocals, and then the sounds of, like, you know, the percussion and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounded great. It sounded awesome. I just had so many issues in the past. It's just, it all stresses me out.
The key phrase to that is in the past.
Yeah. Also, true.
You have to have enough experience with doing, you know, what exactly does stress a computer?
Yep.
You know, sometimes the issue is the speed of the hard drive, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to minimize the latency as well. And that becomes the bigger challenge, is where to set the latency.
Yep.
But, you know, we were running at 256 samples of latency, which sounds like a lot, but it's less than 2 milliseconds. And it doesn't really feel that bad.
No, it's not noticeable at all. At least not for a live environment, anyways.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, cool. Okay, let me ask you a couple of last questions here. So vocally, I mean, like I said, your voice was amazing. I got to watch you do your warm-ups and stuff like that. I mean, to keep your voice I mean, you and I are very similar in age. To keep our voice, I've went through some severe voice issues with, you know, having a hiatal hernia and causing all kinds of neck issues. What are you doing for warm up for your, are you doing anything specific, anything unique? What's your warm up process?
I mean, I'll give you three things that I've learned. And this is, again, you know, 20 years ago when I was out on tour, my warm up was 30 minutes and it was crazy and it took forever and it was very complicated and it was all kinds of scales and all kinds of blowing bubbles and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And what I realized ultimately, the two things that really affected the way I sang was how I hydrated, the way that I hydrated, and what kind of blood flow was I getting through my whole body. Mm-hmm. So I know you were there, you saw me, I don't know if you saw me, but I was doing a lot of push-ups and doing a lot of stuff like that. Yep. Partially because I want to look hot for the girls, but also mainly to get my blood flow. And the blood flow part of it is an amazing, amazing way to get your system in gear to sing.
Yep.
But the hydrating thing, I'll tell a small sort of trade secret. So the problem with a lot of people, especially singers, is they'll walk around with a jug of water and they'll drink water all day long. So one thing about drinking a lot of water that a lot of people don't realize is that bodybuilders do that. They drink a ton of water just before a contest. Why? Because it's a diuretic and it makes you pee out all the water.
Sure.
So you literally dehydrate yourself when you drink water on a constant basis, because you just pee it out. If your pee is clear, you're drinking too much water.
Okay.
What I learned was if I spent my entire day living my life exactly the way I would normally live it, meaning I drink water when I'm thirsty, I don't drink water when I'm not thirsty, I avoid caffeine products as a matter of just health for singing,
sure.
But I don't go out of my way to drink water except for 45 minutes to an hour before the show. At 45 minutes or to an hour before the show, I will drink one full thing of, one of these. I'll drink one of these.
Yep.
And then I will sip on another one of these for roughly the next 30 minutes.
Yep.
And what happens is that, you know, what is that? That's, I don't know how many ounces that is, but it's a decent amount. It's probably 24 ounces at least, right?
Yeah.
And that takes about 30 minutes to circulate through your body, which is what people don't understand also is when you're drinking water, you're not lubricating your vocal cords, you're hydrating the muscles that are your vocal cords.
Yep.
So you have a high level of hydration and you end up being truly hydrated. So in the old days, when I drank a lot of water prior to the show, or all day long, I'd get up on stage and by song two, I was drenched, completely drenched.
Yeah.
And now if I would eat and do normal stuff, and now when I take it, I don't get sweaty until song three, four, five.
Okay.
Because, and the reason why, scientifically, is I'm retaining more salt.
Yep.
So when I don't drink, if I drink water all day, I pee out all the salt in my system.
Yep.
If I don't drink, I retain the salt, the sodium, and the sodium bonds with the water and it stays in your system longer and you're hydrated for longer. Then you start sweating it out. Then you pee it out, all that stuff.
Yep. Yep. What was the bubble thing you were using?
So that's from my buddy, Jamie Vendera, who's a great vocal coach. Jamie and I have known each other for a really long time. He designed this thing called Dr. Vox. And it is essentially a big straw into a bottle with water on the bottom. And you blow bubbles into the water in various keys, and it creates various amounts of pressure back on your vocal cords. So depending on how much water you put in it, you create a various amount of pressure, and it allows you to exercise those muscles without having to yell, scream, or whatever. So if I do 20 minutes of that thing, and then I'll try a couple of loud notes, I'll know exactly, oh, do I need to do another 5 minutes, or am I ready?
Yeah.
And it just sort of dials it in really quickly.
Yep.
Very simply. Yeah. And it's very good.
Yeah, awesome. Very cool. I've seen his work, and I'd never seen that in person. So I was actually excited to see you use it. And then I was like, I think I'm going to go get one of those things and start doing that.
Yeah, they're overpriced, but it's because they're custom made. Of course.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's wind this down. Hobbies. What takes you out of music? Anything that you do to kind of cleanse the palate of music? Any hobbies? Anything like that?
Yeah, mostly video games. I spent most of my time in the gaming universe. I spent most of my time really getting into sim racing, a lot of racing with wheels and like actual. I'm a big car guy, a big Formula One person. I love all that stuff, and I have a nice chassis and a wheel and a thing and PS5. And I used to race here and on my computer, iRacing and stuff during COVID. And then slowly but surely over the last 3-4 years, I've gotten into, first person shooters like Call of Duty and things like that. And I enjoy that a lot. I try at this age to not get too invested in things that cause anxiety and sort of create, So as long as I can play those games with my friends, I'm okay. If I play them by myself, I get too wound up and upset. But if I'm just playing with my friends, I have a blast and we just laugh. And, if I die, I die. It's not a big deal. but I like gaming a lot. Spending time with my son is the highlight of every day.
Of course.
My wife also and I have a really good time and we go out on the weekends. And, it's just living in Indiana, it's a different lifestyle. Her dad, my wife's dad, has a boat. So when we go out in the summer, we're on the pontoon, we have a blast. It's a lot of fishing. It's a nice life. I just have a lot of ambition for this year.
Yep.
And as I said, I'm a late bloomer. So I'm intending on doing things that are probably not age appropriate, but I'm just going to do them anyway.
Well, do it while you can. Absolutely. Any plans on hitting the road at all anymore, or just
kinda... Yeah. So my goal is to restructure the show so that it's essentially a one man band.
Okay.
And like I said, with the intention of making music a little bit more modern, I just have a vision for a modernized project. I've had it for a long time, and I just had to decide whether it would be Ra or something else.
Sure.
And because Ra has a base and there are people who like it, and we have 400,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, I'm like, why start from zero?
Yeah,
I agree. I'm going to use that as a platform to launch this new sound. I don't really care that much about, it's not my, I'm not doing it because I feel, like I'm going to break the band at my age. I'm doing it because I honestly believe that what I have in my head is really, really cool. And if it takes off, awesome. If not, I know it's going to reach the people that love it. And that's all that I really care about, but it's going to be respectful of the other songs. It's just going to be its own thing.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited. Your songwriting is right in my, my sweet spot for what I like. So I'm excited to hear it.
Excellent.
Well, so Haj, thank you so much for doing this. I can't thank you enough. This is so cool. I mean, you've got so much knowledge and experience for a wide variety of things as we went through. And, it's just really cool to kind of sit down and talk to you about the details behind a lot of this stuff. So thank you so much.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Well, before we call it a day, where do people go to find you?
I'm all over Instagram and Facebook. The Ra Facebook page is literally Ra Official. Mm-hmm. The Ra Instagram is Official Ra Band. And then the website is raband.net. And you can get to all of it, including the merch store, right from there. So raband.net is your best bet. But Sahaj Tikitin on Facebook, Sahaj Tikitin on Instagram.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much, man.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for watching part 2 with our guest Sahaj from Ra. We hope you enjoyed it. You can check out all our other guests, all our other episodes on all your favorite podcast locations. You also can go to YouTube to watch by searching for Tales from the Pit podcast. Go to our website, talesfromthepit.net. I'm Jason. I hope to catch you on the next one.
This episode was edited and produced by me, Jason Levasseur. Visit talesfromthepit.net for more episodes just like this.
So I had no idea that Foley was even a thing. You know, like everyone else, you know, I thought when, you know, the camera's rolling, they capture all the sounds. So I went to a studio and I saw Foley artist working. I'm like, well, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm making sounds for movies. I'm like, well, what's production doing? Sleeping when they're recording? Like, what aren't they doing? He's like, no, you have to take into consideration, like, you know, they got to capture the dialogue, you know, and a lot of times they can't use props that are too noisy because then you're not going to hear the dialogue. You're going to hear the noisy props. So they go out of their way to make the set silent to capture clean dialogue. So I'm like, oh, okay. So they replace everything from footsteps to like hand grab, you know, gun grab, anything is replaced, even chewing. So I'm like, you know what? I'm a little bit of an overachiever. I was walking before I was one. So I got this, you know. I went in front of the mic and tried to walk and I just couldn't. I kept running into the mic. I couldn't get sync. I didn't even see sync for me to get it. And then he said, you know, some people have it, some people don't. You just don't have it. I'm like, ouch, you know? So then I was like, challenge accepted. So I called basically every studio in my area. And after, you know, a gazillion no's, I got one yes. But Foley artists, they don't like to share their craft. Mm-hmm. So I was allowed to sit in with the Foley mixer. So the Foley artists would shut off the lights when I'm there because they didn't want me to see what they're doing.